In 2015, Southern Ohio was in the midst of an opioid crisis. The community came together and created a race. A race that would help prevent drug use in the area for generations to come. This is no ordinary race, and this is no ordinary story. The Buck 50 is a 24-hour team relay race that spans 150 miles of trails, roads, and paths winding through the Appalachian foothills of Chillicothe, Ohio. The Buck 50 has teams of 10 and 5 runners, two van drivers, all for one great cause. The Buck 50 is an incredible two-day adventure for runners, an organization that has vowed to fund every willing student wanting to live a drug-free lifestyle. This is the story of the Buck 50, the race that has created a ripple effect of change and inspiration for more people than we may ever know. One race, one cause. This is Running Off at the Mouth, the Buck 50 Podcast.
What's happening, Buck 50 runners? Dave Huggins here, race director of the Buck 50. I am in the house with our host, Mr. William Presson.
Hello, hello.
I really feel like we're starting to get good at this, William. What do you think?
I think so.
Season 2 is rolling. Is this our 6th episode?
I believe so.
6th episode we recorded.
I think if you're listening to this, it's December 16th.
Yeah, and we're getting, you know, Christmas around the corner. We're starting to have a system of getting some guests in here. And today's guest is a very special Buck 50 individual, Mr. Greg Manson.
Hello, everyone. And hello, Buck 50 runners.
Oh, yeah. So, for those of you who don't know Greg, I got to think, did you run in year one?
Yes.
All right. Buck 50 OG runner. Has ran in every Buck 50 until 2023 when we hired him.
Correct.
So as the race has grown, so have the needs and the responsibilities and the tasks. We were fortunate enough to find Greg. Greg found us, depending on how you want to look at it. We probably found Greg. Greg agreed.
The opportunity presented itself at a perfect time.
That sounds way better.
That's pretty much everything, every way the Buck 50 works right there.
It does.
Opportunities, doors open at the right time, and we just walk right through them.
Yeah, it's like the old days when we used to want to sell out. We thought we were going to sell out the very first Buck 50 at 150 teams in 2017, and that would have been a disaster because we weren't ready for 150 teams in 2017.
Yeah.
But Greg does serve as the race course supervisor.
Say that 10 times fast.
Race course supervisor. That's as far as I'm going to go. And is a humongous help to me as we prepare for race day and really all throughout the year. We'll maybe talk about some of the wacky things that we do behind the scenes to get prepared for race day. But first, we're going to talk about runner number 3. We've kind of started this little series where we verbally discuss the 3 legs of the race for each runner. It's time for runner 3. Greg's been runner number 3. So Greg, tell us what it's like to be runner 3, and we'll just start with leg 3. What does that look like? What's that going to look like for our runners come April?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's fun.
And being runner number 3, you know, overall, I guess you get everything. You run everywhere except on a road. You're actually not, I don't think none of the legs are on an actual road.
I never really thought about that.
I thought about that before I came over here.
It is kind of funky where we send these guys, gals. So we'll start at 3. You're at Lake Hill Campground. No, you're starting off from Hopewell.
Yes.
Checkpoint 2.
Yes.
Going to Lake Hill.
Correct. Campground.
Sounds like somebody needs to read the guidebook.
Somebody needs to be out on the course a little bit more than what he actually is.
Maps aren't in the guidebook.
Yes. Leg number 3. You start out at the parking lot at Hopewell, and your first half mile really is just kind of on a gravel path. I wouldn't even call it trail running, just kind of a gravel path. And then probably about half a mile in, you go into the woods, and it's a little more technical, but nothing like Scioto Trail or Great Seal or any place like that.
No, it's a pretty wide path. It doesn't even have very many rocks or roots, so that's good analogy.
So really, your whole first mile, a little over a mile, I think, is off-road.
Yep.
And then you come out of the woods, run through field, and then you go across Sulphur Lick Road and then hang a right onto the bike path. And then it's roughly 4 miles on that bike path right up to
Lake Hill Campground. Yep. Yeah, when you get off the bike path, you have a short little incline, probably 100 yards, 50 feet uphill, vertical rise. But it's a really nice leisurely run. It's a good way to start out your buck 50 journey, getting loose, being out in nature.
You got a nice, somewhat of a challenge in the beginning and, you know, the little bit of trail that you have, but then get on the bike path and take off.
So we asked this to many of our runners. What did you typically do when you were off, like your group in van one goes to Edina High School, and then you're off until you get back to Checkpoint 10 at Kingston. So what would you do in your downtime, Greg?
Usually after those first legs, a lot of times we would just order pizza and actually go back to my house because it's somewhat close to Edina High School.
Okay, yep.
And have dinner, I guess, and just kind of hang out. Nope. No sleep after the first legs.
Okay. Fair enough.
I don't know if anybody ever did.
Greg's not much of a sleeper, which I love. Like Greg is up for 2 days when he came to work with us in 2023, we kind of had to, I was trying to be gentle and not be too forceful about what he was going to do on the 2 days of the race. But, you know, he was pretty adamant that I'm up, man. I'm there. We're working.
Yeah, I think I saw him late one night, and then I saw him the next day at the finish line, and he looked exactly the same.
Yeah.
Like, no impact at all. Like, he was still, he's smiling. Like, he was the Energizer Bunny, man. Yeah. He was just going.
Very cheerful.
Hey, you didn't see me when I was alone in my truck.
you can see someone be like
driving down the road.
Like, that man over there is crying. Is he okay?
Yes.
So then we're going to go to leg 13. Now, this one is a doozy. Like, I really feel like leg 13.
And it is the only 100% trail leg out of all 30.
That's right.
And yes, it is a doozy.
There's a lot of value. It is fun. Like, I've heard many, 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 many buck 50 runners compliment the race and use this simple phrase. What other race can you go and do a trail run in the middle of the night?
Yes.
And that's the race. That's the leg they're talking about.
Yep. That's what I was. Next thing I was going to say was majority of the runners are hitting this portion of the course usually between midnight and 2 a.m., maybe 11.
Yeah, I'd say they're not getting there much before 11. But there was a lot of traffic going up Bald Hill, Sand Hill.
Yes.
In the wee early hours of Saturday morning.
Yep. The 100% trail, being in Great Seal, it is definitely more technical with roots and rocks and hills and uphills, downhills. A little more challenging, but it is a lot of fun, and you're in the woods in the middle of the night.
So let's talk about lighting. What have you used when you run trails at night?
I always just carry a flashlight.
Okay.
Now, flashlight guy. Bright flashlight. It's yep. like 800 or 1,000 lumens, so it's lighting up the entire, you know, forest. But I don't know. Years ago, I always used to wear a headlamp, and it just started giving me a headache. And so I was like, oh, got a flashlight, you know, I can shine that exactly where I need to see and you know, yeah. see what I need to see on the trail.
We haven't talked about this yet, I don't think, in a show, William, but headlights and illumination are critical.
Yeah.
Critical pieces of equipment in the Buck 50.
I mean, their flashlights in general are a replacement for the sun. And if you don't have the sun, you got to see where you're going. And that's what's going to get it done.
You need it as part of your nighttime gear, you know.
Yep.
We say headlamp. Greg has used a flashlight. I think that's acceptable. You can use a chest lamp. Mm-hmm. You have your reflective vest and a flashing light on the back. If you're wearing the Nox gear that is like a lighted vest, that counts for both those items. You just need to add the headlamp and or chest lamp.
Those are still always the coolest thing to me because you just see a bunch of flashing, like, rainbows going down the road.
They're really neat to see. They're super lightweight. Barely even notice that they're on there. I think that's where they're popular. And they're a pretty hardy item. Like, you know, you may make that investment to purchase that, but it's going to last for many years. But I would recommend a headlamp that has a minimum of 400 lumens.
Yeah, yes. I would say so. I think anything really good, like really top dollar, you're probably pushing that 800, that 1,000. I mean, there's even some flashlights that are even brighter, but it's all in what you're willing to pay. And
yeah, I think you can probably spend 50 to 80 bucks and get a good 400 lumen headlamp.
I would argue probably even brighter at that price point.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the one con, you're the first brave person that I've heard admit that, but those get warm, especially if you're holding them. Certain flashlights do.
Eh. Well, you'll like that. I mean, that I haven't noticed 40 that. Degrees. And
that is true. Well. Built-in hand warmers,
but I also guys. Know, I heard this from a girl doing trail runs, and I thought this was a fantastic idea. They wore a headlamp, and then they took another headlamp and stretched it out real far and wore that around their chest. So they were like doubled up. But I also know if you buy like the Nox gear, they make a nice, I think it's 500 lumens that snaps right into the vest or that yeah. they have. And it's really nice. So really, you can't have too much lighting. And especially doing technical trail runs in Great Seal, because once you cross through Sand Hill, you cross over Rocky Road, and you continue on the Shawnee Ridge Trail, one of the first trails you come to on the other side is called the Rock Garden.
Yes.
And there's a reason they call it the Rock Garden. So you're going to really want to slow down your pace. Pay attention to where you're going, step accordingly. But the more light you have, the better off that's going to be.
Absolutely.
This episode of Running Off at the Mouth is brought to you by Homeland Credit Union. With convenient locations in Chillicothe, Circleville, Greenfield, and Waverly, Homeland Credit Union is here to serve you. Whether you're looking to open an account, apply for a loan, or explore solutions for all your financial needs, Homeland is the place to go. We're proud to have Homeland Credit Union as a sponsor and appreciate their commitment to our community. To learn more, visit them at homelandcu.com or stop by one of their branches today. Homeland Credit Union, your partner for life's financial journey.
Certainly a big thanks to Homeland Credit Union, their support of the Buck 50, and their support of Running Off at the Mouth, the Buck 50 podcast. So, Lake 13 finishes at Checkpoint 13, which is hosted by Integrated Services. They're doing a great job. They've gotten the race the last couple years. We actually just got an email from them the other day. They're all fired up about coming back again in 2025. So an exciting part of the race. You know, the faster teams are starting to catch up. All those checkpoints are getting really busy in the middle of the night. drivers, make sure you utilize your passengers to help you park or back up your vehicle so you don't end up in a hole. Pay attention to what the checkpoint volunteers may be telling you as far as where to park. But most of you probably don't drive a lot of 15-passenger vans in your daily life, and doing it in strange and unfamiliar areas can be a little bit dangerous. So please utilize your other runners, and runners, please help out your drivers. So we finished leg 13. Anything else about leg 13 we should bring to light?
I don't think so. Just take your time.
Let's tell them how we mark the trails. How do we mark trails in the middle of the night?
With bright reflective arrows, and also with the
plow right stakes. Yep.
Those plow right stakes made it a lot easier.
Yeah, we put hundreds.
Oh yeah.
So we're putting a plastic hollow stake in the ground that has a reflective top on it, and we're popping those in at a minimum about every tenth of a mile. And when things get really technical, we add more, and then we put turn arrow signs that are really bright reflective signs at every turn or intersection. And then we also utilize
wrong ways.
So if you see a wrong way sign, you've gone the wrong way, you need to turn around, look back where you're going.
But do you know what will help you avoid those situations? If you get out and run your leg beforehand and read the guidebook.
You definitely can, at a minimum, study your map. If you're coming from Arkansas, you might not be able to run your leg beforehand, but definitely reading, using the All Trails app, the GPS trackers you can also utilize. They're going to show you exactly where you are on the course if you go to the site that we're utilizing during the race. It's not an app, but it does work phenomenal. But you're not going to get lost, people. Just trust us.
Hey, we're not going to get that guidebook up to the top of the New York Times bestseller if we don't mention it every week.
Every week. Read the guidebook. How many times have you read the guidebook, Greg? I mean, now...
Oh, at least 10.
Oh, that's awesome. That's got to be a record. No one's probably read it more than 10. If you have read the guidebook more than 10 times, please reach out to us at Race Info. We have a special prize for you.
You know, because back before you interviewed me for the position, I was like, ooh, I got to know everything about this race.
You were studying up for the job interview.
Yes.
That was a pretty intense process, too.
That was. Okay. I think you called me when I was out on a run, and we talked for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes I live life with a lot of feel. Like, if it feels good, we're doing it. And then we'll just truck through it. But I had a good feeling about Greg, and he's really come through and helped me, and could never be more excited about times when Greg and I get together and work/goof off. All right, so now we're going to go leg 23. I used to say that if you were runner 3, that was the mountain goat of the whole course, because that was when we originally ran up Sulphur Lick Road. Now that that's come out, it's a little less, but there still probably is more climbing for runner 3 than most other people.
Yeah, you got that first, quarter of a mile that's relatively flat, but then you got about the next mile and a half that's kind of almost all uphill. Yeah,
so leg 23 has been nicknamed Fire on the Mountain. Down in Soda Trails, and you're going up a gravel road the whole way to the fire tower.
But the last time I did it when I was running number 3 was fairly early in the morning, and the sun, you know, was just really starting to come up, and it was awesome. That was one of my favorite legs, you know, running. Once you get up the hill, then it's just kind of rolling.
Yeah, you got some rollers after that, yeah.
Yeah, you definitely want to take advantage of the downhills, because, you know, you got a uphill coming very shortly.
I feel like there's the part where you're going up leg 23, and it's where leg 24 breaks off to the Long Branch Trail. I feel like that's about the tip top of the hill.
Yep. I would agree. Yeah, you got a lot of downhill from that.
Which is also fun as runner three, because then you get to see some other runners coming at you, and those runners aren't lost. That's runner four getting on leg 24. So you're sharing the road there as you work your way back to the fire tower.
And I have been runner four numerous times. So when I was runner three and I saw those runners coming back towards me and they were still on the forest trail, I would just kind of laugh to myself and say, ha ha, good luck.
It's exactly 2 point. Well, here's info. If you're runner three going up the hill, where you come to that point that runner four is taking off into the woods, it is 2.45 miles to the fire tower at that point. So you're up most of the hill, but you still got almost 2.5 miles to finish up your portion of the Buck 50. Anything else about runner three?
I don't think so.
All right. So these are, so tell us what your experience has been like when we tore you from the Carl's Cheeseburger Chaser running team. You were no longer able to run in the race. You were just running the race with the rest of us. But tell me what that first race felt like in 2023 when you kind of took that leap and became an employee of the Buck 50.
Well, of course, 2023 was the infamous first rain delay the Buck 50 has ever had. And then, you know, the monsoon from what, 11 p.m. to about 6 a.m.
That's exactly what I remember.
So my emotions kind of went all over the place. At first I was like, oh man, I wish I was running. But then when I was sitting in my truck at 2 a.m. and the rain was just beating down.
Oh, it was pouring at 2 o'clock. At 2 o'clock.
That's the year I was thankful that I had mandatory sleep time, because I just woke up at about next morning and they were like, oh man, it rained so bad. And I was like, it rained?
Oh my goodness.
It's funny that you mentioned 2 o'clock, because I know exactly where I was at 2 o'clock during the race. And I was sitting at checkpoint 14 in the back parking lot. I had taken a light plant down there to add some more light in that parking area, and I cranked that baby up. I was getting soaked doing that. Andy Brown, who's a really good friend of mine with Vinton County Banks, also a Buck 50 sponsor, but they run Checkpoint 14. And I'm sitting there thinking, man, I really ought to get out and go talk to Andy. But I was pretty far away from the checkpoint, and I'm thinking, I ain't got any other clothes. I will be soaking wet for the next 24 hours, and I ain't doing it. So I just sat in my truck and looked at the GPS trackers and stayed dry.
Yep. How I describe it to people is I, you know, usually say, if I would have been signed up to run, I certainly would have been doing it, but man, am I glad I'm sitting in my warm truck at 2 o'clock in the morning.
So what are some of the things that you do as the race course supervisor? What does that look like?
Kind of ever-changing, I guess. My first thought, of course, was how in the world did you do all of this yourself before I came on? You know, there's a lot of stuff I'm doing that, you know, you would say, yeah, I used to do this by myself. I used to do this. I'm like, wow.
We kind of talked about, you know, Greg would probably average about 5 hours a week, which is a pretty good gig for a retired guy. But
I'll take that.
As race season comes, he has several 30 or 40 hour weeks, and he would say, oh, I don't think you're going to like my hours this week. I said, Greg, I love your hours, because everything you're doing is stuff I was doing before. So, but things like getting signs ordered, starting to think about preparations for the course. You did a really nice job of opening up my eyes into how to mark the course, because we used to just do that as a, like, one truck, one trailer, one team going out and just kind of plowing through all 150 miles. And you were like, why don't we just break up? I'll take my truck and you take your truck. And we've done that the last, well, 2 years, really super effectively last year. I think last year was the fastest we ever got the whole entire course marked. And that's such a relief because we start on Sunday. We usually mark trail Saturday. Sunday we start marking the roads. Were we done on Monday afternoon? Tuesday morning
I think it was Tuesday.
We always have a few little straggling pieces here or there.
Yep.
But still a huge lift, and that separation and your idea to go out and run two different crews, super helpful.
It is fun and challenging at the same time.
Yeah, it's nice for us to have someone who's ran in the race to have the perspective of what does this look like when I come to an intersection, and how myself as a runner would need to mark this portion of the course. And that's really what we try to do for you runners out there, is we really look at it from a runner's perspective and think, what is the best way to help you get through this 150-mile monster turn by turn? And so, for instance, we have painted arrows on the roadways every half mile. And then at each intersection, there's two turn arrows and there's one straight confirmation arrow painted on the road in white paint. And we usually do that about a month before the race starts to make sure that it's dry weather. You can't paint in the rain. You can put signs out in the rain, but you can't paint in the rain. And I know because I tried it once. It was damp. It really wasn't raining. But then when we start putting signs out, we will put a sign in between those straight confirmation arrows that are going on the course. So essentially, you will see a sign or a painted portion on the road every quarter mile. So plenty of information out there to help you navigate all 150 miles of the course.
I think it was maybe year two or three of the Buck 50, and I remember telling Dave as we were marking the course down along old U.S. Route 50, I said, Dave, one of these days this thing's going to get so big that we're going to be stretched so thin, we're going to have to hire somebody to come mark this course. And Dave looks at me and he goes, don't you dare say that. You got to take that back. I love this. We're never going to change this. And here we are going into year nine, and lo and behold, we got the man painting roads.
I do love painting roads, though. It is one of my favorite jobs. I go out there with them stencils and paint arrows. Greg has taken a big portion of that off my plate, but I still get out there and do as much as I can, and it's fun to do. And it's painting is a little bit, I'll use the term, more dangerous than putting signs out, because you got your head down. We have a system where we drive the course backwards when we're doing that, so we have our vehicle there to protect us. But it's nice to kind of have two people there to be looking out for traffic while you've got your head down, spray painting, little runner guys and arrows.
We have definitely discovered the quality of paint makes a big difference.
Yep, those folks at Sherwin-Williams sure do make a nice spray can.
Yep.
We buy a lot, probably about 24, 30 cans of spray paint, about what we use to...
I think so. That sounds about right.
Hook up the course, help the runners. But Greg, anything else that you've experienced in the Buck 50 behind the scenes that you want to share with our great listening audience, the things that they don't know? What would they want to know that you learned that you felt like was interesting going from a runner to working behind the scenes?
Well, like I said before, just everything that you do for the race is just amazing. That, you know, a lot of people don't realize, or maybe they do, the effort that you put into
things
it.
That we're doing 12 months out of the year, not just February, March, April.
Yes.
Yeah.
And just the cause, you know, can't get much better than, you know, drug-free clubs and the schools that it supports. And
it's definitely a recipe for success when you have all these different ingredients. And I think it's motivating for us as we're working and doing things that we have a purpose and a cause that is worthy to put forth the effort and time and hours that we're doing to make it all come together. So thank you very much for coming in, talking about Runner 3, using your experience. You've all been listening to Running Off at the Mouth.
We appreciate you listening to Running Off at the Mouth, the Buck 50 podcast. If you have any comments, questions, or concerns, please email us at raceinfo@thebuck50.com. And as always, have a great day, Buck 50 runners!